Former President Bill Clinton returned to the Granite State yesterday, not to campaign for himself or his wife, but to add his voice to the state's gubernatorial race.
Maggie Hassan should be the next governor of New Hampshire.
It's actually the president's appearance added some excitement to the campaign. Hassan is one of three Democrats in the party's gubernatorial primary this year. The other candidates are Jackie Silley and Bill Kennedy. Hassan's background includes 6 years in the state Senate, including a stint as majority leader. But in 2010, she and many State House Democrats were pushed out as the legislature reverted to Republican control. Now, 2 years later, as a candidate for governor, Hassan has strong words for those who replaced her, often criticizing what she calls the extremist Tea Party legislature. Still, she and the GOP have one place in common. At least, Hassan has taken New Hampshire's so-called pledge against new broad-based income or sales taxes, the only Democrat in this race to do so. Today in the exchange, former Democratic senator and gubernatorial candidate Maggie Hassan. Next month, we have more candidates scheduled. The primary is Tuesday, September 11th. Let's hear from you this hour, your questions about where Maggie Hassan stands on the issues, what you hope the next governor does for our state. Also, if you're an undecided Democrat in this primary, how are you leaning and why? Give us a call. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email if you'd like. exchange@nhpr.org is the address. And Senator Helsum, welcome back to the exchange.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, how much do you think endorsements like the one you received yesterday from Bill Clinton, even though he mispronounced your name, how much do these endorsements convince voters to pick you over somebody else in this primary?
Well, first of all, I should say that President Clinton is in great company with people mispronouncing my name. If I had a nickel for every time people did, I'd be a very rich woman. And you can ask my husband, who grew up with the name. So I was thrilled to have President Clinton here because, as president, he stood up for middle-class families. He created jobs. Our economy took off under his leadership. And that's what we need to do here in New Hampshire. We need to be focusing on creating jobs. I'm focusing particularly on something President Clinton talked about last night, which is the skill gap that we have in this state. You know, we have a lot of jobs that are going unfilled because we don't have workers with the right kind of training. And we're a small state. We've got really good community college, good university system, good K through 12. We need to focus on apprenticeships and voc tech and adult ed too. But we should be able to make our workforce the best in the country, and that will help our economy take off. So when Bill Clinton is willing to come to New Hampshire and endorse me, I'm thrilled by it because his focus as president is much of what I want to focus on here in New Hampshire as governor.
It's kind of unusual for a former president to get involved in a primary. I mean, I can see in a general election, but in a primary.
Well, I think President Clinton, as do many other Democrats and independents throughout, and some Republicans too, I think, throughout the state and the country, understand what's at stake in this election. This is really about whether the Tea Party, which has a supermajority in our legislature right now, is going to consolidate its power by taking the governor's office this fall. And because of the harm that that would do to our state, I think it's imperative that we really focus on the importance of this race. And President Clinton was here to emphasize that.
Well, and let's dive into that, Senator Hassan. You've campaigned a lot against what you call the extremist Tea Party agenda of the legislature, like you just said. But try this out for size. Voters did put Republicans into office in 2010 by historically large margins. What does that say to you about what Granite State voters really want? Is it possible that they really like the idea of small state government, low taxes?
Well, if that is what the Tea Party was doing, you know, certainly we have a history of small government, low taxes, something I have worked to uphold during my time in the state Senate and something I understand very well as a candidate for governor. But when you look at what not only this legislature has done, but what the two Republican candidates for governor also say they support, they have embraced and endorsed this legislature and Speaker Bill O'Brien's agenda. It's a very divisive agenda that hurts middle-class families. So while they may say that they were for small government, we have a group that has spent a lot of energy trying to interfere with a woman's right to make her own health care decisions, for instance, in this legislative session. And we, at a time when we need to make sure that we have the best education system anywhere in the country aligned with the 21st century economy, a majority of the House last spring voted to repeal compulsory education. And my Republican opponents support a voucher system that was just passed over the governor's veto that diverts millions of dollars of state money to private schools with no accountability. So I don't think that speaks to small government and low taxes. I think that speaks to a divisive agenda that takes us back decades and really hurts middle-class families. I'm running for governor because I want every family in New Hampshire, no matter what its challenges, to have the opportunity to succeed. And that means there has to be some access, good access to quality education and to other basics.
Well, and education, abortion rights, reproductive rights, as you called it, have been big issues in your campaign. And I want to ask you about those, Senator Hassan. But let me also invite our listeners to join us. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in the exchange, we're kicking off our coverage of New Hampshire's gubernatorial primaries this year with Democratic candidate Maggie Hassan. We have other candidates scheduled for next month, so stay tuned for that. You can join us right now at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. You mentioned taxes, low taxes, low spending. You seem to say you're all on board with that, Senator Hassan. But as I understand, when you first ran for state senate, you supported an income tax. Is that correct?
I didn't take the pledge, but I oppose an income or sales tax. I would veto one if it comes to my desk. I have never supported one as a state senator, and I won't as governor.
So you really didn't take the pledge back in 2002, but now you're firmly on board with that.
Yes.
How do you feel, Senator Hassan, about those Democrats who say, look, let's not cut off debate. Let's at least have a discussion about this. Let's not close the door on any options.
Well, we have been having a discussion in New Hampshire about this for 30 or 40 years.
That's for sure.
And it's a discussion that is ongoing. I believe it is very important to let voters know what your positions are about issues that are very important to them. I do not think an income or sales tax is the right thing for New Hampshire because our economy is structured around not having one, because we can fund our priorities without one, and because it would really hurt our middle-class families. They are struggling right now. They haven't had a raise in a long time while their costs keep going up. And as President Obama is out working so hard to extend tax breaks for middle-class families and as part of the Jobs Act, extended the payroll tax cut for middle-class families, I think the last thing we should be doing is taking money out of those families' pockets with a new income or sales tax. So I don't believe we should have one, and I'm being clear with voters about that, just as voters ask us to be clear on many other things. So we take pledges and take positions on a lot of issues, and I think it's important in New Hampshire, where voters are clear about the parameters they want us to work with, that we're clear on this.
Let's take some calls, Senator Hassan. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. And first up is Kathy in North Conway. Kathy, thanks for calling. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks. Actually, I did hear some talk in the past about the, talking about rate, putting in an income tax here in New Hampshire and a sales tax. And I said, oh, no, that'll never happen. But now that there's serious talk about it and just, you know, it would be a deciding factor for me, number one, who to vote for, because I think we definitely should not be having an income or sales tax here. But also, too, it would be my decision to move out of state if we did institute an income tax or a sales tax, because I live pretty close to the edge economically, so that would put me over the edge, and I would just have to move. So
Kathy, are you a Democrat, Kathy, if I may ask?
I've always voted independent.
Uh-huh. So no sales or income tax. Important for you as a voter. That helps make your choice.
That makes my choice.
Kathy, right. Thanks for calling.
Well, Kathy, thanks for calling. And you know, the comments you just made have in part of the reason and part of what's informed me in my position to oppose an income or sales tax. And as I said, I oppose it and I would veto it if it came to my desk.
Here's an email from Christopher, who says, yesterday, former Speaker Norelli said we shouldn't limit debate on potential state funding sources, i.e. income tax. Christopher says, why does Senator Hassan feel this way? Isn't that somewhat of a, quote, extreme position? Thanks for the email, Christopher. What do you think, Senator Hassan?
I think we have demonstrated that we can fund our priorities without an income or sales tax. In 2009, when the recession hit, our revenues dropped precipitously, 20 to 25% pretty much overnight. What we need to be focusing on is growing our economy, because the economy is what generates revenues, and that's what you need to make sure that you have when you then look at how you're going to fund your priorities. But even at the height of the recession, New Hampshire Democrats, working with Governor Lynch, came together and we funded a responsible budget that took care of our most vulnerable. I'm very proud of the work we did in the Senate. We actually came up with criteria about how we'd make decisions about where to cut and how to cut. We actually cut the general fund budget, which is the part of the budget funded by state revenues, by about 5%. And we ended up with a $20 million surplus at the end of fiscal year 2011. So we know we can do it. I think it would be a mistake to change our tax structure with an income or sales tax, because our economy is structured around not having one. So I think it's, again, important to be clear about that. I know there are people who disagree with me, and they are free to say they disagree with me. They are free to debate this, as they always have. I'm just saying where I am on the issue, because just as people want to know where I am on things like women's health care or environmental protection or marriage equality, people in New Hampshire want to know where we are on the income or sales tax, and I don't think we should evade the issue.
Super quick, the budget that you just mentioned, how much help did you have from the stimulus package in creating that balance or that
surplus?
Well,
we certainly did have help. Local governments in particular had help with the federal dollars that came in. It helped keep teachers in classrooms. It helped keep police on the streets. And so certainly that was helpful. But, you know, again, you look at the 5% reduction in the general fund budget, and that tells you that we made some hard decisions and achieve some efficiencies and effectiveness.
We'll talk more about your time in the state Senate and some of the issues you're talking about in this gubernatorial race. We'll take your calls to 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. More of The Exchange coming up in at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. Debate over cuts to the food stamp program. New Hampshire weather for today. We have a severe thunderstorm watch in effect for this afternoon and evening. Cloudy, humid with showers and thunderstorms. Some could be severe, highs from mid-70s to lower 80s. Tonight, cloudy with showers, thunderstorms. Again, some could be severe. Lows tonight, 60 to 68 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the Althaus Investment Group in Concord. One office managing $40 million of retirement nest eggs for baby boomers in central New Hampshire. ALTUSinvest.com. And from Goff Wilson, a global immigration law firm helping businesses and individuals achieve successful immigration solutions. Online at goffwilson.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we begin our coverage of the gubernatorial primary here in New Hampshire with former Senate Majority Leader Maggie Hassan. She's a Democrat. Later in this summer, we'll hear from other gubernatorial hopefuls. We invite you to join us now. Let's get your questions about where Maggie Hassan stands on the issues that are important to you, what you hope the next governor will do for our state. Also, if you're an undecided Democrat in this primary, how are you leaning? How are you assessing the candidates and why? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. The email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Senator Hassan, we talked a lot in our first segment about your pledge against new broad-based taxes, income or sales taxes. A tax you did support as a state senator was the limited liability corporation tax, the LLC tax, which became hugely unpopular. I think it was repealed almost before it went into effect. Looking back, how do you feel about this idea? Was it a mistake?
When we passed the LLC tax, which again we did in the very short time frame at the end of the budget cycle because of the recession, because revenues had crashed so precipitously, what we intended to do was make sure that accountants and lawyers at large accounting firms and law partnerships who were not working full-time but got what's considered kind of passive income, you know, got something like a dividend that a shareholder would get, would pay a tax on that the way shareholders in New Hampshire pay taxes on their dividends. What we learned was that it wasn't working that way, and it created a great deal of uncertainty for small business owners who were, you know, lucky in the recession to be scraping by with their business. So I actually led the effort to repeal it. And, you know, that's going to happen sometimes. Things don't work the way you intended them to. The most important thing that I think people should know is that I actually do listen to people and find out how things are working. And if we need to change, we will change it. Because, again, when you're dealing with the kind of emergency that the meltdown of the economy caused, you're going to do some things fast to try your best to make sure that you can keep the state going and make sure that you have the resources you need in an economic crisis the way we had to help people who are suddenly out of work. So that was what we were trying to balance. But obviously, it didn't work the way it was intended to, so we repealed it.
Well, and there was another type of revenue that was discussed quite a bit when you were in the state Senate. Correct me if I'm wrong, as I understand you've been a supporter of limited expanded gambling. Can you explain that to
sure,
us?
Sure, yeah. The next governor of New Hampshire is going to be operating in an environment in which, except for the state of Vermont, our state is surrounded by casinos. And so the question becomes not as much what you think about gambling, but acknowledging that people in the state do in fact gamble, and acknowledging that economists are telling us with what Massachusetts is doing that a lot of New Hampshire citizens will go down and spend not only gambling revenue but rooms and meals revenue down in Massachusetts. I think it makes sense to have a highly regulated, high-end casino, if it can truly compete with the kind of casinos that Massachusetts is going to do, near the Massachusetts border, as long as we can do it while we protect New Hampshire's brand, which is that we are a family-friendly state with a pristine environment, that we have a strong outdoor recreation and tourism business. I think we can do both things well. But the New Hampshire governor needs to make sure that any proposal meets those standards, that we address public safety concerns. And, you know, one of the things that having revenue from a casino would do would be allow us to address the societal problems that do come with gambling. The other thing that is pretty compelling is that those who are looking at what's going to happen with Massachusetts tell us that we're going to lose a lot of revenue down to Massachusetts, but 75% of the costs of the societal problems that come with gambling are going to come back to our state. 75% of the cost from New Hampshire citizens. So it makes a lot of sense to me to keep the revenue here, create jobs, have more revenue to fund some of our most important priorities. But we do have to do it right, and we do have to make sure that we're protecting our state.
We've looked a lot at this issue here on The Exchange, as you well know. And I thought there were some studies that also told us, given what Massachusetts is planning, pretty big expansion of casinos down there, New Hampshire shouldn't bother.
Yeah, and I think that that's a debate among economists right now. What I have read tells me that if we do it timed right and we do the right kind of facility, we really could compete effectively with what's going on in Massachusetts.
Let's take another call if we could. And again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Jim is calling from Plymouth. Hi, Jim. You're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Laura. How are you today?
Fine.
Hey, great guest, Matt. You know, I'm just concerned with the whole pitting the Tea Party against Maggie, right? Maggie and the Tea Party. I'm really concerned because I didn't vote for anyone on a Tea Party level. There was no ticket that said Tea Party. I voted for some Republicans back in 2010. You know, it's like more of the same. I pit people against each other, and, you know, maybe the Democratic numbers will make me the winner. We had a governor here for the last three terms just rolling shell games on our, you know, finances, cut this, make it look like it's still there. I'm just concerned that there's just games, and that's what we're playing here. And I'd really like her to address the idea that, you know, it just comes across as bitterness when she talks about the Tea Party not caring about middle class, and she's the only one that does.
Okay. Jim, thanks for calling in.
Well, first of all, I think there are a lot of people in the state who care about middle class folks. I was raised by a Depression-era scholarship kid who went off to World War II and fought in the Battle of the Bulge. And he came home and was really determined to make his community and his country a better place. He married my mom, who's a high school history teacher. And the two of them raised us to understand that community and family was everything. And they also raised us to understand that every individual can make a difference. And in particular, because my dad was was a public servant himself, he raised us to understand that elected officials make a real difference when they get into office and really have to make decisions about what kind of policies they'll support. When I look at what this legislature has done, I am looking at the real impact of the votes they made on middle-class families. They ran saying that they wanted to focus on jobs and the economy, and they felt that our team hadn't done that. I am focused on what actually works on the ground, what facts tell us, what constituents tell us is happening in New Hampshire, and then responding to that as a problem solver. In my first term, I was a member of the minority, and there was a insurance law on the books that had been passed, I think, in 2003, that discriminated against sick and older workers. I got a coalition as a member of the minority together with five Republicans, I think, and eight Democrats. We actually stood up to the leadership at the time in both the House and the Senate and got that bill, that law, reversed and changed. That's the kind of common sense consensus building I've done as a member of the minority and as a member of the majority. That being said, you do sometimes have to stand up and say what you think about what's happening. And when you look at what this legislature has focused on, when you look at the fact that Governor Lynch and the legislature actually had a bipartisan effort to extend the research and development tax credit in this state in the last session, about the only bipartisan piece of economic development legislation we had, and Bill O'Brien and his legislature decided to hold that up and not expand it because they couldn't get anti-choice legislation through the legislature, I think voters should know about that. That's, one, not consistent with a small government libertarian ethos, which is so important to this state. And secondly, it really put at risk our economic development and also the real lives and economic choices that women have. And I think that voters should know about that. Elections are choices, and you will always have candidates talking about what makes them different, better than the other candidates out there. But it is really important for people to understand what this group actually has done while it's in the legislature and how that differs from what they said they'd do.
In telling voters, and certainly as a candidate, that is your job, to tell voters what your opponents have done, what you would do. Jim seems also to be hitting the point, though, that, you know, we should look at the language we use. I talked with this about this with former Speaker Norelli yesterday. You know, Democrats say Republicans are waging war on women, and Republicans say Democrats are waging war on religious freedom, and both are using, you know, extremists. So I'm just wondering about that use of language that we hear these days and how Jim, I think he makes a good point. You know, it just seems like if you disagree with me, you're the enemy and you're an idiot and whatever.
Well, look, and one of the things that I think is lost sometimes in our discussion is that politics is actually the alternative to war. Politics is how we make decisions without going to war. So I prefer to say that the Tea Party is dismantling a great deal of progress that we made. I do think that their agenda has been extreme and divisive. And I use those words with care because I agree with Jim. Sometimes, you know, the political rhetoric gets so heated and, you know, so overblown that we use these words, and they become meaningless to the average person listening. I liken it to being a parent trying to get dinner. You're standing in the middle of the kitchen, and the kids are fighting, and you finally just turn and say, I don't care whose fault it is, stop. Just stop it. We'll sort it out later, but I want some peace and quiet. We need to get dinner.
I think that's where Jim is coming
from. Yeah, and it certainly strikes me that way sometimes. So Jim's call is a good reminder, as is your question, that language matters. And, you know, we're all in the heat of a political debate, we are sometimes going to use language that we shouldn't.
Well, and perhaps that's part of the success of Governor Lynch. He doesn't go there.
Yeah.
He doesn't go there. All right, let's take another call. This is Ann and Keene. Ann, thanks a lot for waiting. Go ahead. You're on the air with Maggie Hassan.
Good morning. Good morning. This is a very interesting talk. Thank you very much. My particular question is about income and sales tax. I'm a lifelong Democrat, but I'm from Maryland, and I'm not afraid of an income tax. And my husband and I bought our home just 4 years ago, and right now, we're one of those people who is being helped and threatened by our mortgage company, which I think is an issue in the legislature. People are working to foreclose and help us keep our home at the same time. But if I've heard intelligent friends say that New Hampshire is getting to be a place where you have to be wealthy to afford to live here, and so we rented for a long time, and now I'm almost wishing we still were. And I would just like to a little more information about that. Now I can hear that Senator Hassan is very intelligent also, so I need to hear what she has to say about that. Why was that other person wrong? And why is a sales tax and an income tax wrong for New Hampshire?
Well, Ann, this is a good point. And, you know, Senator Hassan, I wanted to ask you this question, too, when you said, I don't support an income tax. I want to help middle-class families. Some people say what Ann says. Right now, our tax structure, they say, is favoring wealthy people.
Well, first of all, property taxes are very high in our state, and it is something we should look at. But one of the things that I think people forget sometimes is the New Hampshire Constitution doesn't allow a graduated tax. So even if I thought it was a good thing to do, middle-income families would end up having to pay an income tax as well as wealthy families on top of the tax structure we already have.
Because it would have to be flat, is that it?
Yeah. And local authorities, your town controls most of your property taxes. So the state can't, institute an income tax and automatically reduce your property taxes. I've done five state Senate campaigns, knocked on thousands of doors, had this conversation with lots and lots of voters. And I think most voters are very concerned that their tax burden wouldn't go down. And I think there is a great deal of evidence to indicate that that's true. So when I look at the issue and look at the fact that we have an economy structured around not having an income or sales tax, we have a business profits tax and business enterprise tax, which are unique. We have an interest in dividends tax, which a lot of the wealthy do pay because they live off of interest in dividends. I think it's a mistake to assume that this would somehow be great tax relief. I think it wouldn't be. The other thing that Anne alludes to is she was a renter. Think about the people who are renting who don't pay a property tax who would suddenly have an income tax. So I think the assumption that it will somehow magically reduce tax burdens for middle-income people is just wrong. And in fact, the experience of other states tell us it's wrong.
Well, Ann, thanks for the call. And good luck hanging on to your house. And let's take a caller this time from Concord. And Tara's on the air. Hi, Tara. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. Thanks for having me. My question, Senator Hassan referenced that she was a child of a scholarship kid and a history teacher. And, you know, I really spend my time in a college access program sending a message to students about the importance of higher education, but it's very difficult to send that message when public policy and funding for higher education isn't consistent with that message. And I'm just curious how our next governor would address that issue.
Thanks a lot, Tara.
Thank you very much for the question, Tara, and thank you for your work. Look, this legislature cut the university system budget by 50% and the community college budget by about 30% at a time when we should be focusing on making our workforce the very best in the country, which will attract innovative businesses here and help our economy grow with really good jobs. That decision by this legislature made no sense, especially when you look at the fact that they did things like cut the cigarette tax and laid off auditors from the Department of Revenue at the same time, costing us tens of millions of dollars in revenue that could be instead used to fund the university system or the community college system. So I am committed to working to restore the funding cuts to our university and community college system. I think we are going to have to repeal some of the tax cuts that this legislature put in place. We are looking at some economic growth, which should also help our revenues come back up. So I think it's going to be really, really important that we reinvest, especially in education. And then we look at how we make sure that our education system is aligned with the 21st century economy. We need to have businesses and workers and educators together to make sure that businesses can let educators and workers know what kind of folks they need. And then, you know, we've got a great community college system. It's a great, nimble system that should be able to respond quickly to that kind of interaction. And then we should be able, again, to make sure that whatever level of education or career a person is at, if they need to retrain, if they want to change course so that they can be a more skilled worker, get a better paying job, or just need to go into a different sector, that we've got a system in place in New Hampshire where they can do that quickly. And that will attract businesses here and our economy will grow.
Well, thanks for that call, Tara. And I've got at least two or three other emails on the same point, people upset about the higher education cut. You also mentioned, though, and many Democrats have made this point, Senator Hassan, Republicans, quote, have made it harder to afford college but easier to afford cigarettes. This is what we're hearing again and again and again. We're heading into a break, but I do want to explore that a little bit with you. We talked to Bill O'Brien about it on Tuesday. I've got some quotes from Republicans in an article here by the Eagle Tribune who say, despite the fact that tobacco tax revenues have declined, store owners on the border say the reduction has boosted their business. They're very happy with it, including the president and CEO of the New Hampshire Grocers Association. So I'd like to explore that a little bit with you after the break. We'll keep taking your calls, too, so stay on the line if you're there, or join us right now at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. When we come back, we'll try to get to as many of your calls and emails as possible, so keep it right here.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from Rapp Young and Pignatelli, celebrating 25 years of innovative client-focused solutions for businesses and nonprofits throughout New England, rafflaw.com. And Plymouth State University, now offering selected degree programs online, including the Bachelor of Science in Nursing for current RNs. Details at plymouth.edu/online. Good morning, it's 9:39, and this is NHPR.
On the next Fresh Air, Christopher Bea talks about his new novel, What Happened to Sophie Wilder. It's in part about why some people have the capacity for faith and others do not. The character Sophie becomes a devout Catholic.
But that conversion doesn't necessarily lead to peace, doesn't end her struggle, but rather leads to a new struggle.
Join us. Fresh Air, today at 3 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, should the Granite State privatize its prisons? Email us your thoughts before the program at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, you can join our conversation at 1-800-892-6477. We're kicking off our coverage of the 2012 gubernatorial primary with former state senator Maggie Hassan of Exeter. She served 6 years in the legislature. In August, we have several more candidates scheduled, so stay tuned for that. Right now, though, we'll take your questions about where Maggie Hassan stands on the issues. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Senator Hassan, just before the break, I was trying to give the other side of this cigarette tax decrease that the Republicans did and that Democrats have really latched onto this year. Again, Republicans say, look, there's an economic upside. Border stores say their business is much better, and we like this tax reduction.
Well, a couple of things. When you know you are dealing with a difficult economic situation and a gap between revenues and necessary spending on something like the university system, you have to look very hard about whether you're going to cut taxes. And the argument that the Republicans made at the time they cut the cigarette tax was it would increase state revenues because the business would be better. And in fact, that's not true. The other thing is that right after, just about the day that the cigarette tax cut went into effect, Big Tobacco raised its wholesale prices, so the consumer isn't getting significant or any savings on a pack of cigarettes. Big Tobacco is getting the benefit here.
Wasn't that a nationwide increase, though? So relative to New England, we were still ahead?
Well, relative to New England, we would have been ahead without the cut in the cigarette tax. There was no need to make us more competitive. We already were significantly less expensive than the rest of New England. So it wasn't something that was going to magically make us ahead of, you know, the group. We already were really ahead of the group. The other thing that people lose sight of in this discussion is that what we know about the cigarette tax is that when we increase it, fewer and fewer young people take up smoking. It is very hard for older people who are already smoking to give it up. But we know that when cigarette taxes go up and a pack of cigarettes becomes more expensive, fewer and fewer young people take up smoking, which not only obviously makes them healthier, but reduces our long-term health care costs too. So, you know, my concern is that the Republicans here made an ideological choice. They always argue that whenever you reduce taxes, you'll see economic growth, which has not been proven to be the case at all. George Bush cut taxes, and look what happened. Our economy really collapsed. I think it is really important to have as low taxes as you can, but you really also need to make sure that you're investing in the necessary infrastructure of the state, and our university system is part of that infrastructure. Our community colleges are part of that infrastructure, and it makes no sense when you're already the least expensive cigarettes in New England to cut that even further, increasing teen smoking, increasing health care costs, and decreasing state revenues by about $20 million in this fiscal year. At the same time, that just didn't make any sense.
Well, tax cuts in the economy, and you mentioned George Bush, and I won't go there right now, but I think this issue of the cigarette tax cut is going to be a big one in this race for governor. And if listeners want to hear what Speaker O'Brien had to say about that, he was here Tuesday, and you can go to nhpr.org and listen back to that interview. Right now, though, Senator Hassan, I want to share you with our listeners, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Up next is Joanne in Dover. Hi, Joanne. Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've don't know if this is a question or a comment, but Senator Hassan has made the point that if she is elected governor, she will oppose a broad-based tax, specifically income or sales tax. I would like to suggest that we do, or some of us do now, pay a broad-based tax in New Hampshire. At the way it is established is quite inequitable, and I will use myself as an example of this. I am 78. I am still working part-time because if I don't, I'm going to end up having to sell my house, which I bought in 1968. I have worked on it and maintained it all these years at considerable cost. My total income, including Social Security, including interest and dividends on my investments, is $23,000 a year.
So the interest and dividends tax and how it affects retirees, what do you think, Senator Hassan?
Well, I think that the problem you talk about, which is modest means and difficult taxes, is a problem throughout the country. And it's a problem that we are having because our economy took such a hit in 2008 and 2009. I understand that there are real struggles in the state with our current tax structure. I just don't believe changing it is going to change that struggle at a time when the real issue is whether we've got the kind of economic growth we need to generate the revenues that we need to fund necessary programs that we all count on that are essential to our ability, again, to work and grow the economy. There are some things that other states do around property tax relief that I think are worth looking at. There are certainly things we should be doing to make sure that there are better and better paying jobs in New Hampshire, again, making ourselves a leader in innovation so that people can earn more money. And in the caller's case, she's working at a time in life when many people had hoped to be retired.
78, as, for sure.
And I think that, again, we need to look at property tax circuit breakers for people and see if there's a way we could be adjusting that to make it more equitable. But again, I come back to the fact that we have an economy structured around not having an income or sales tax. It is in fragile recovery. We need to focus on the recovery, not changing our tax structure in a way that would harm our state.
Well, Joanne, good luck to you, and thank you for joining us. And here's an email from Christine in Bristol. She says, I'd love to hear Senator Hassan's opinion on Obamacare's, that's her term, not mine, Obamacare's Medicaid expansion. Would she choose to expand Medicaid in New Hampshire? If so, how would she pay for it? Christine, great question. Thank you for the email.
And Christine, it is a great question. A couple of things. One of the things I worked on the most in the state Senate was on health care issues. Like many people in New Hampshire, I have family members who have particular health care needs. One of the reasons I got into politics in the first place is that Governor Shaheen appointed me to advise Education Funding Commission, one, because I'm a business lawyer, and so I have a lot of experience bringing people together to solve complicated problems in a common sense way, but also because I'm the mother of two children, one of whom, now 24, my oldest, Ben, has severe physical disabilities and complicated medical needs. So I am well aware and very conscious of the fact that healthcare is essential for all of our citizens. It's not only the right thing to do as human beings who care about each other, it's the smart thing to do economically. We can't compete economically with countries where everybody has health care and therefore has a healthier workforce at a lower cost if we continue to have high costs in health care and continue to have a lot of people who don't have access to either insurance or care. Because remember that every family in New Hampshire that has private health insurance is paying about $1,000 a year of their premium to cover people who don't have insurance. So there's a hidden tax on your health insurance premiums already. What the Affordable Care Act does is say that the federal government is going to pay for an expansion of Medicaid should we choose to do it. They're going to pay 100% of it for the first, I think, 2 to 3 years, and then about 90% of it for the 6 to 7 years after that. I am committed to using federal money to expand health care coverage for the people in our state, but we need to do it in a way that's right for New Hampshire. We need to do it in a way which will allow us to look at our very high medical costs, because we have some of the highest costs in the country in New Hampshire in terms of the market basket of medical services. And so I'll look at that very closely. One of the things that the Supreme Court decision did a little bit unexpectedly was say that this Medicaid expansion was optional for states, which I think probably gives a governor some leverage in dealing with the federal government about how we're going to pay for the expansion and how much and how long the federal government will completely pay for this. But the critical thing is to increase access to care and coverage for people, because, again, the other thing that was very good about the Affordable Care Act is it insists that private insurers as well as Medicaid and Medicare cover preventive care. And boy, if we can get people doing routine preventive care, our health care costs will go down considerably. And that's another benefit of making sure that people have access.
Well, I'm so glad that Christine raised the question. Some states are already signing on, yes, federal government, we will do this. Others are signing off, saying no. I think Florida and Texas come to mind. So are you ready at this point, Senator Hassan, to say, yes, if elected, I will do this Medicaid expansion as spelled out by the Affordable Care Act or not?
I will use the federal money to expand access, and that very likely means the Medicaid expansion. But I want to see what kind of bargaining power I have with the federal government to make sure that New Hampshire is not only getting a good deal, but that we're doing the Medicaid expansion in a way that makes sense for us. And that's, you know, a governor's job is to chart the state's own course. But, you know, one of the things that has been really disappointing in the last 18 months with the majorities in the legislature and on the executive council is a kind of ideological reaction to any federal money. So whether it's federal money for health care, you know, there was federal dollars available to New Hampshire so that we could set up our own insurance marketplace for this health care under the Affordable Care Act, which would have, again, allowed us to do it in a way that was right for us without the feds telling us what to do. And this group rejected it. So now it is likely that the federal government may establish our own insurance marketplace for us, which I don't want them to do. This group also rejected money to study whether we should extend rail up into Nashua and maybe Manchester, which has really great potential for economic development. And this group rejected federal money, I think, really because it was federal money, not because they maybe didn't think rail was a good idea. So I'm really focused on working to see what kind of partnership with the federal government you might have that would really benefit the people of New Hampshire. And in the case of the Affordable Care Act, certainly expanding and extending health care coverage to people who currently don't have it is a really important thing to do.
Well, and we did a whole program on this last week, I think, and one of the themes that came out was skepticism that the federal government will follow through with those big 100% right. and 90% yeah. dollars. But also the theme that's come out of the National Governors Association is exactly what you said, which is, let's see if we can work this to our own advantage. Let's take one more call if we could. And this is Christopher in Laconia. Hi, Christopher. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning, Laura. Good morning, Senator. Thank you for being here today.
Good morning.
I have a question regarding energy. In order for us to do the things that I'm hearing from many of the candidates, our economic base must expand. And now with the spotlight on manufacturing, there's been a lot of discussion on increasing the manufacturing base here in the state of New Hampshire. However, the number one cause for the leaving of manufacturing here in the state is the energy costs. Over 90% of the energy that gets produced here in the state is exported. So we're basically held hostage at this time. What is it in your administration, Senator, that you would do to develop an energy policy which benefits manufacturers and the state of New Hampshire as a whole?
Christopher, thank you. Big question for businesses. As you well know, Senator Hassan, go ahead, please.
Sure. And one of the reasons this kind of question comes up from businesses all the time. And one of the reasons I supported while I was in the state Senate and helped get it through the state Senate, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative known as REGI, is because it does help businesses. It's helped businesses and homeowners save at least $5 million in energy costs already. And it's created hundreds of jobs in our state because it's also provided incentives for alternative energy development within our state, which would give us homegrown sources of energy while creating jobs. So we do have to continue to look at this issue. When you talk with some of the energy distributors in the state, they believe that there are going to be some less expensive sources of energy, perhaps on the natural gas side of things, coming in. And that may be at least a short-term relief for us. But we need to do a better job as a state of really crafting a long-term energy plan. Manufacturing is still really our biggest sector in the state, and advanced manufacturing and high-tech manufacturing is something that we're particularly good at because you need not only a special skill set, but you need workers who know how to work together and who know how to change specifications quickly in a manufacturing setting. So we're really poised to be a leader in that, again, if we can bridge this this gap that we have in skilled workers and the need of businesses for them. And that's why I want to focus on workforce development too. But we do need to have a longer-term energy strategy, and I am committed to bringing people together to make an energy plan, and that would obviously include business people.
Well, Christopher, thanks for the call. Again, a big concern for New Hampshire manufacturers. One last question for you, Senator Hassan, as we get toward the end. This is a primary. You have two candidates that you're going up against on September 11th, Jackie Sealy or Bill Kennedy. Here's your chance. Make the case why voters should choose you.
Well, thank you again for this show, Laura, and for the opportunity to be here. I'm running for governor because I want every family in New Hampshire, no matter what its challenges, to have the opportunity to succeed. And when you look at my record in the state Senate, I have a real record as Senate President pro tem in my second term, Senate Majority Leader in my third term, when my peers selected me to those leadership positions, of bringing people together and turning vision into practical solutions that move our families forward. And that's what I'm committed to doing as governor. I think that leadership experience and my record is really distinctive. I also have some differences from my opponents on things. Senator Sealy and I, for instance, differ on predatory lending. I thought it was important to vote to ban predatory lending. Families, working families, were being charged as much as 500% interest for payday loans, and Senator Sealy chose not to vote for that. So those are some differences, but mostly I'd like people to focus on the fact that I have a record of leadership, problem solving, and accomplishment. I have a good plan to move our state forward, and I am asking people for their vote to
do
that.
And also, Senator Sealy and Bill Kennedy are not in favor of the pledge against broad-based sales and income taxes.
Big difference. Right. And Bill Kennedy is proposing a tax, and Senator Sealy is just saying she won't take the pledge but hasn't told us whether she supports a tax.
All right. Senator Hassan, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Maggie Hassan, former Democratic Majority Leader and a Democratic candidate for governor. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime.